mineral relation. This is the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations that for a regular November 5th meeting. With me today among the membership is our Vice Chair, Lyle Ray. I don't know, Lyle, if you have a comment or thought, just for a wave.
No, sir, we can get on with this since we're all aging in place here.
That's true. Right. Yes, we all are. I won't elaborate for the record what we were just talking about. Just as a reminder for those who may be watching this on, or for those who are participating, this is being recorded for posterity as well as for potentially for CTN. So if you have any, it's a remote meeting. As you know, if you wish to be recognized or make a comment or ask a question, either use your raise hand function or just simply wave to your camera and I'll try to recognize you accordingly. And before I go any further into the agenda, I did want to acknowledge, the person who's with us today, that this is Mayor LeClaire's last meeting with the ACIR. She's retiring later this month, I guess, and so this will be her last meeting with us. And I just want to say, Mayor, that it's been, I mean, obviously, this is not the last time we'll see you, of course, but it's been a real pleasure to work with you in this capacity as well as previously in all of our previous iterations of this work. You've been a real leader for all of us and a touch point, I think, for sanity and for perspective on how important it is to keep in mind the impacts of the medium-sized suburban communities or larger suburban communities, as well as our major cities and our more rural communities. You've been a terrific voice and a terrific friend, and thank you for your leadership. And we're going to miss you on ACIR. And you're muted.
Thank you very much. It certainly has been a great opportunity to view. You know, we all look at things from the perch from where we sit, and sometimes I think it's beneficial to view things from another aspect or another perspective. It certainly, I like the differences significantly on what the wishes are and then what the intentions or the ultimate unintended consequences are in many cases, not only in government, but in life in general. So appreciate all of your efforts. I know this has been an ongoing organization that really has kind of evolved, and I really think it's headed in the right direction as far as really doing something meaningful and really, you know, making a difference and bringing both the state and the local communities together in a way that we can begin to mold and modify government to be a better service to the people that we ultimately serve, which are the same set of population that we ultimately serve. So thank you for the opportunity, and certainly I will miss all of you, but certainly I hope I keep in touch with many of you. And certainly when I leave here, I am just in awe of the amount of knowledge that each of you contain within your respective areas. And that does not go unnoticed on any given day with these conversations on all of you, from, you know, the knowledge and expertise that Brendan, you have from the perspective of being in state government leadership, and from Lyle from Prague, and John Filchek, just in awe of what the knowledge that you have, and I wish I could import it. And Senator Cassano, thank you for your service, and everyone else that gives here of the time and effort, and to those that serve on OPM, and to Bruce for actively sitting here for so many years, taking in all this information and documenting it. I certainly will keep my eye on the organization, really, to see if we can move the needle on some of these things. And I just want to thank you for the opportunity to have been part of this journey with you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Chair, if I could just say one thing. I wanted to add my congratulations, Mayor. I could tell something was different now that your credenza is spotless. Usually they're heaped up with awards and other things. So congratulations, all the best, and we'll certainly hope to cross paths. So thank you.
Well, there is one ultimate problem when you serve for 11 years. It took a U-Haul to get out of here in about 10 bins of recycling paper.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I hear you.
I believe you. Yeah.
You look behind me, you see that same problem.
And you moved it all over to Steve's house.
Right, exactly. And John, Elsa, so you had your hand raised. And you're muted.
I was just clapping hands in appreciation for our efforts for the region and the state. So thank you.
Thanks, John. Okay.
I'd like to add just a comment, Marsha. Your leadership on CROG is just it's been a continuation of good leadership over the years. We're obviously very proud of what it does for the region, but it can't be done without good leadership. And with Lyle at the helm and with good leaders, as mayor's chairing CROG, we see nothing but progress and cooperation. And that's the big thing that's made the region so strong is the leadership from CROG, and you've been fantastic. So I appreciate that very much.
Thank you, Senator. Great. So I think we, we all appreciate, and congratulate you for moving on to bigger and better, hopefully from here. So we will look forward to continuing to cross paths with you. So thank you for being a valuable member of ACIR. I'll move on at this point to item 2 on our agenda, which is to approve the draft minutes of the October 1st ACIR meeting. Do I have a motion on that?
Hello.
Motion by Senator Cassano.
Second.
Lyle. By Vice Chairman Ray. Do we have any discussion on that? Seeing none, let me try your minds. All those in favor of adopting the minutes from last month, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Any abstentions? Okay, thank you.
Carry 3-0.
Right. Before we move on, do I remember correctly that at the point we were voting at last month's meeting on the September minutes, that we didn't have a quorum yet? Did we ultimately get that passed?
No, I'm glad you reminded me of that. I should have recirculated that. The minutes were circulated in advance of the September minutes were circulated in advance of the October meeting, but without a quorum, it was not possible to adopt those.
Well, although it's not on our agenda for today, I'm wondering if we might take the moment to take care of that business administratively. I guess the first thing procedurally we should do is make a motion to add that to our agenda if folks are inclined to do that.
So moved.
Second. Okay, moved by Lyle Ray, seconded by Steve Cassano. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So this has now been added to our agenda today. And with that, I'll entertain a motion to adopt the minutes from the September meeting, whose date?
So moved.
It was the Monday after Labor Day, so whichever one it was. So that's been moved and seconded.
Second, yep.
Any other discussion on the September minutes? If not, I'll try your minds. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Thank you. Those minutes are approved as well. So we took care of that administratively.
Yeah, good catch. Good catch, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Just, even though we talked before the meeting about how old we're getting, sometimes you get flashes.
Steel trap. There we go.
Okay, so moving on to item number 3 on our agenda. This is the ACIR regular reports that we have coming due. The first of those is the session mandate report that is actually due 10 days from today as a report to the legislature. Bruce had sent out a draft of that report a couple of weeks ago, reminded us earlier this week about it with some indications as to some additional items that he added to this year's report that are maybe a little bit distinct from previous reports, mostly because of what realities we've been facing in a post-COVID world, but also to make a point about I'm going to paraphrase for you, Bruce, if it's okay, but not to be critical, but to point out that when OFA scores the bills as they come through, they may indicate that there is no actual they may indicate that there's no fiscal impact on municipalities related to that particular mandate. But as Bruce points out, a mandate on municipalities that may not require an appropriation but does require staff and staff time is still a mandate, and ACIR intends to flag all legislation, whether it's in terms of its mandate on municipalities, not just financial, but otherwise. Bruce, is that a fair characterization of the point you wanted to just raise with all of us as we look at this report?
Yes, it is. And there are enough changes in there to take what in the recent past has been a 2-page letter into a 3.5 page letter. And basically what I wanted members to consider was whether I might have taken it too far. I didn't want to take half a step. I took a full step, and I felt it was okay. A couple people who reviewed it felt it was okay, but it's important to know that the group is okay with that kind of wording. I don't find it to be adversarial at all.
I tend to agree. There any other comments? Maybe we should take a motion to approve the mandate report because it is due next week or 10 days from now. So could I have a motion on approving and then we can discuss it?
I'll make a motion to approve it as submitted by Bruce.
John Filczak has approved accept it as approved. Senator Cassano is a second. So discussion on the comments Bruce and I were just making or any other aspect of the report?
No, just Mr. Chair, just to say the wording looks fine to me. The summary of the mandates, the whole report looks good.
Great. Thanks, Ron. Any other comments from folks?
I'll just add one comment. If you look at, I guess it must be the second page, you'll see that I have Mayor LeClerc's name highlighted because she is still a member today. I believe it's maybe Monday that she will no longer be an ACIR member. So by approving it today, her name clearly would remain there. If it were approved later, you might remove it. But if you scroll down a little, you'll see two vacancies listed. One of those is Bob Valentine, who was a mayor through your last meeting. Goshen, the changeover from a first selectman to the next happens the day after an election. So he has not been an ACIR member since Wednesday. The other vacancy is Scott Shanley, who was an ACIR member until he retired as town manager back in the summer. And I just wanted to check and see if you would like me to list their names as members here who were involved with this, or if we should be, you know, be very official about it and list two vacancies rather than list the members' names as being part of this.
It's a great point. My inclination is to add them added just because of the contribution that they've made thus far. How does everyone else feel about that?
I would agree and just possibly just put, you know, the date of their term, that well, their term ended on it. That way it's clarified.
Yeah, good point. Ron?
No, yeah, I was going to say I agreed with when the session was when we were in session, that sort of thing. They were active members, so I agree.
Yeah, maybe with Martin's suggestion about indicating in parentheses the termination of your term, that might be appropriate as well.
Will do.
Great. Okay, so we've have a motion and a second on the adoption of the 2021 mandates report. Seeing no further discussion, I'll try your minds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed or any abstentions? All right. Thank you. And thank you, Bruce, for all the good work on that. I know that's a labor of love. So,
Brendan?
Yes.
Yeah, just a follow-up to the recent conversation. So we have two vacancies. Do we have an idea what we're looking for? Or is that something we could be, as individuals, looking to bring people in? Or?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think Bruce can clarify who is, what I was just asking Bruce this morning, what the appointment basis is, if you will. You know, who is it who's appointed the particular members who have retired, and who do we have to go to seek replacements for those? So, Bruce, maybe you can cover that.
I just saw Ron Thomas raise his hand, and since he is involved with two of the vacancies, he should lead here.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. The CCM has appointments in mind. One of the appointees didn't want her name put forth until after the elections, a little superstition there. So we should be submitting names by next week for the two vacancies we have.
Great. And those do not require, as I recall, they don't require any approval by the governor or anyone else, right? I mean, these are straight from CCM who you recommend. Isn't that right?
It's my understanding, if Bruce could clarify it, that it's that CCM submits the name and the governor approves it.
What'd you get into?
That's correct. And Betsy Guerra with COST also has... She has Bob Valentine's vacancy in the process. As CCM or COST nominates potential members, the governor appoints them.
And we have reached out to someone. I know she wanted to sit in on a couple meetings before she committed. So I'll follow up with her and then reach out to our board again.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Betsy. Yeah, so all ACIR members do have to be approved. Well, not all, I shouldn't say that, but the appointments from the from CCM and COST do have to be approved by the governor, and the rest are legislative leadership appointments. Is that right, Bruce?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Good, okay. So with that, Senator, hopefully that answered your question. That you raised. So with regard to other reports, future reports, one Bruce continues to remind us that our agendas each month about upcoming reports that are due, the mandate compendium supplement, which is due in January, and then our own annual report and work plan for 2022, which as Bruce indicates, is has no due date, but we try to get that done by 2022. Bruce, I don't know if you have any, if you want to just add anything on those.
I am working on the compendium supplement now. Most of the, I'll call it data that go into it are from the report you just adopted. That same research goes into the statutory part. I've already gone through all of the regulations that have been adopted, that had an effective date after the last compendium supplement. So those are all being plugged in. As for the annual report, I think the key thing that will require ACIR input is going to be the work plan for 2022. And so, you know, whether today or next month, it would be helpful to give some thought as to what you would like written in the annual report about plans for 2022. The remainder of it just kind of recounts what the ACIR has done this year. Feel free to let me know of anything you'd like to see emphasized in there. And again, no due date, but early 2022 would be nice for that.
Okay, great. And some of our discussion today will, I think, be reflected in that report in January, because I think we're going to be setting some direction for where we are going as a group as well. So, okay, thank you for that, Bruce. Item four on our agenda is the study that we have from Public Act 21-2, which is the hybrid meeting report. I will just briefly summarize where we have, what we've been doing since our previous meeting on October 1st. At our last meeting, we suggested, or it was suggested, that we meet with the chairs of planning and development and GAE and other other interested parties, just to make sure, including the governor's office and OPM, just to make sure that we understood the direction that the drafters of that legislation had in mind. And I'm sorry that I don't have the date up on my calendar, but we did have that meeting. I think it was very productive in terms of understanding where folks were coming from with regard to not only what they wanted to see in this report from ACIR, but also what their intention was with regard to direction that they were hoping to go in after next April, when the existing authorization from that legislation expires. So I think that one of the most important pieces that we took away from that sort of informal meeting with leadership was that it perhaps made sense to conduct a survey of interested stakeholders on two items, basically. One, what are some of the issues that folks have experienced with regard to either remote, electronic, or hybrid meetings, to get that input from folks, and then also to discern from folks what solutions and workarounds they've been able to come up with in the course of dealing with the realities of the pandemic under the executive orders. We then strove to put together, Bruce did most of the work on this in terms of putting together the actual survey format in a Google Doc format. And he then disseminated it to our usual cast of characters, as well as others who are named in the legislation, as well as who have expressed interest. And Bruce, maybe you can update the group as to what at least not the content necessarily, but the replies and responses that we got to the survey.
Yes, I'm going there now. You're up to 208 responses. although I have to take credit for two of those as I was playing around with it, trying to make sure it worked. So I guess I should say 206, although one of them did have my opinions. Anyway, 206, and if you recall, those of you who completed the survey, you could list multiple things. You weren't locked into a particular multiple choice. You could list multiple things as far as your affiliation and such. But what's nice to see here is that nearly 80% of the people reported having participated in electronic meetings as a member of local government. That means elected, appointed, or employed by. Quite a few people have been as a member of the public. A number of people who had things to present at meetings. So 70% plus participated as a member of the actual agency that was holding the meeting. I'm surprised by this. 45% chaired an electronic or hybrid meeting. I did not expect that high of a response rate. That's very helpful.
Yeah.
And something in the ballpark of a third either had business on an agenda of an electronic meeting or attended as a member of the public. Real happy with the cross-section of people that responded. I won't go into the details because it was such an openly worded survey. The intent was to find out all the possible perspectives. You know, it's not a popularity contest. 60% say this and only 40% said that, because it could be that just one of them has, you know, the great idea that makes hybrid meetings work more easily. So we now need to wade through these responses and see what can be pulled out. And that'll be something that can start after today.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I think I'm really, really impressed with the level of interest and response that we did receive. And this is the first I'm hearing of the percentages and the clarification and qualifications of those responding and those perspectives. So thank you for doing all that calculation, Bruce. I think it's going to be up to our group now to think about how to sort out the various responses that we received and perhaps group them in such a way. And my thought, and I'm just putting this out there, but my thinking on this had been that as we reconvene the group of folks who participated in our organizational meeting just before Labor Day and who we need to continue to consult with per the legislation, namely the municipal attorneys, the chief information officer, as well as the FOIC members, as well as all the other stakeholders who are interested in this, that when we reconvene our group, that we can really try to break it down into particular subject areas. What those categories are, I have no idea at this point. We really do need to, I think, sit down and really go through all of the responses, and maybe a small group of ours can help facilitate that. Set aside a couple of hours, maybe next week, to cull through those responses and figure out what makes sense in terms of categorization, and then set on the task of reconvening the group, suggesting these breakdowns of subject matter, and then go accordingly. That's kind of been my general thought about how to proceed. Francis, you have your hand up too.
Yes, thank you, Brendan. This is a question for Bruce. Bruce, do you think we have... it's a very impressive number of responses. Do we have adequate representation from everybody we'd like to have across the state? So we know that some towns use a meeting form of government, some are town council, some are RTMs. We have seen some challenges in the last year with RTMs and town meetings in terms of online meetings. Also, do we have, you know, perhaps advocates for transparency or freedom of information? Do we have the, you know, persons with disabilities? You know, there may be certain interests we'd like to make sure actually have an opportunity to contribute to this.
I see a hand up from a member of the public who is involved with the RTM down in Greenwich, and so I'm happy to hand it off to her to handle that aspect of it.
Amina, you need to unmute. Amina, you'll need to unmute.
Good morning. This is Amina Ahmad. I'm Assistant Town Attorney for the Town of Greenwich. I did not mean to interrupt Mr. Witchin, but if you would like me to just say a couple of words here in terms of representation. Greenwich has a 230-member RTM, and we have been meeting in a remote Zoom format right since the beginning of the pandemic. We've gone through somewhat of a hybrid model as well, and our moderator, Pro Tem, I know, submitted a pretty lengthy and detailed explanation of some of the challenges we have faced with our RTM meetings in just the remote settings, and now with the hybrid setting we've got. So I heard Chairman Sharkey say there would be a time when your group reconvenes and perhaps gets into some of the details and into the weeds on some of this. And we would love to have a place at the table at that time, but just wanted to introduce myself and to let you know that we are very interested in what you're doing and very grateful for the work that you're doing and putting together in terms of reporting back on this legislation. And we face some unique challenges with a 230-member RTM. So thank you again. I just wanted to say that, and happy to participate as you go along.
Thank you. Thank you, Amina. I apologize for mispronouncing your first name. Thank you for that. And we look forward to your participation along with the rest of the group. So I think maybe to Francis's point, it seems to me that there are going to be different categories of issues that we're going to need to take on here that will be broken down on matters of, I'm doing a stream of consciousness here as to what I think some of the subject matter is, but certainly, you know, voting boards and commissions, how do you conduct votes versus just hold meetings? How do you manage hybrid as well as electronic in lieu of electronic? Notice issues and so on. I think all of these things we'll be able to glean from the responses that we receive, but it is going to take, I think, a handful of us perhaps to set aside the time to really go through what some of those responses look like, so we can categorize effectively what subjects we want to pursue. So I don't know. We don't need to do this right at the moment, perhaps, but perhaps maybe if you could indicate to Bruce after the meeting if you'd like to participate in that culling of the responses, for lack of a better term, so that we can then break it down a little further. Bruce,
I just wanted to add that what I can do is to download the responses into an Excel spreadsheet that can go to people. And there's tremendous variety. And, you know, the thought that immediately came to mind as I was beginning just to skim preliminary results is that, you know, prior to COVID, there was, 300 years of evolution of how meetings are handled in Connecticut. And now, you know, a year and a half later, here's the assignment to redo everything. And so it would be impossible to hit whatever the deadline is, early 2022, with a sane set of recommendations that'll carry the state for the next 300 years. So you might look at it as being, what are the key things to keep in mind? You know, avoiding a one-size-fits-all solution. I think it's terrific that you got so much feedback regarding places like Greenwich and other Fairfield County towns with the RTMs, because they are a completely different world. But they're not all that different from, say, a town meeting town, where they may also have 230 people voting on a budget or whatever. So it's going to be a challenge to put it all together, but you might consider just what are the most important things to do for 2022, set other things aside to handle following years, and in writing recommendations, don't recommend legislation that might cut off options for the future.
Great point. And the other thing that I would add is that I think it's very, and I'll defer to Senator Cassano on this, but I think in particular for the P&D chairs, there is a real desire, I think, and I know Representative McCarthy Vahey expressed it at our informal meeting, and I think she's expressed it to this group, not reverting back to the old way is in fact the direction I think the legislative leadership wants to proceed with. But they need some I think it's very clear that there's a new reality that has actually opened up a lot of possibilities for participation at the local level that didn't used to exist before COVID. And there's a lot of interest on the part of the legislature and leadership to reflect that in new opportunities. But as Bruce is pointing out, we have to be careful about codifying or recommending that the legislature codify procedures and methods that are not going to be flexible and what will not reflect the variety of governments and issues that are faced by our individual towns, large and small. So I think that would be a good watchword for all of us as we proceed on this. I don't know if anybody else has any other comments on that, except to say, so I think where we've left it is the soft deadline for the responses to the survey is today. Hopefully with a couple of volunteers from within this group, we can do the administrative task of sort of sorting out the responses, and get together perhaps next week, set aside an hour and a half or two, to make sure that we have these categories fairly represented, and then convene a meeting of the fuller group, certainly before Thanksgiving, hopefully in the week, you know, maybe the week after next, to really start getting to work on. Any other thoughts or comments on that?
I would just support what you've said, Brendan. You know, we have been a name for a long time, but we really haven't been an effective organization for a long time. Just the membership, the participation, if you look at meetings and so on, is a dramatic change taking place already. There's a lot we can do jointly, and I think you're starting to see the beginnings of that. So it's only good for Connecticut.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Senator. Jim?
Yes, I just wanted to agree. I think agree with Bruce and you. It's really important that we don't get locked into a sort of one size fits all solution to this. And it's also really important, I think, that we avoid, just as you've said, getting this codified into some sort of a strict, I guess I'd say a mandate that limits future development. Because I think, although we may come up with an excellent format as a result of these discussions, I think that this will evolve rapidly in the next few years, so that it will be improved upon, and what may develop in the way of technology may really help bring us to a better place, really. So that would be my point.
Thanks, Jim. Yes. Betsy.
Yes, I just wanted to point out, if you hadn't seen it, that the Freedom of Information Commission did publish guidance on the new public act. So we should make sure that we take a look at that and see whether that their guidance presents any issues or solutions to holding remote and hybrid meetings. So I'm happy to share a link to that.
Great. Thank you for that. Yeah, if you would, that'd be good. I also am going to suggest something in the spirit of what we're intending here and what our task is over the course of the next couple of months before the February 1st deadline for our report. What I'd suggest is that, two things, really. One, and I'd be interested in Jim's reaction to this, because I know you've been a real proponent for the idea that ACIR continue its work on this whole notion of the local government of the future. There's nothing more futuristic than, I think, this topic. Plus, I also think it's going to be extremely time consuming, particularly over the holidays, to be working on this particular project. And what I was going to suggest was that in lieu of we're going to get our next agenda items to talk about the LGF work that's been done on home rule thus far. But we've completed that work. And rather than maybe adopt a different or a new initiative within the LGF subcommittee, that perhaps this becomes don't add more work to ourselves between now and February 1st, and really focus all of our efforts towards this topic, so that we have enough bandwidth to actually take care of this, and not adopt any kind of new studies or projects under the LGF banner. I don't know, Jim, how do you feel about that?
I agree.
Okay, great. The second thing I was going to suggest was, that in the spirit of the topic, that we perhaps hold either the organizational, the meeting of this study group, and or the full ACIR in a hybrid format. I know last month I asked folks about to take their temperature on how you'd feel about us meeting in person at the LOB, which is now open. And folks were not quite ready to do that yet. But since that time, ACIR has done a presentation to the Planning and Development Committee on this home rule study. And we did it in person. It was a hybrid meeting with folks participating remotely as well. It was the first such meeting in the legislature at the LOB since the pandemic. And I suggest that we try to do that if we can, in part to learn ourselves what some of the limitations and concerns are as we explore this topic. Is anybody violently opposed to that idea? Participation remotely is still an option, but the in-person is, I think, helpful and certainly will inform our perspective, I think, on this topic and as well as the rest of the work that we're doing.
I think it's a good idea that we conduct our study kind of in real time, in real life, trying it out on a hybrid basis. Then we'll see how it works. And so I'm supportive of it.
Okay.
I'm too. I was just going to say, yeah, I'm supportive of it. I think one thing we should think about too is maybe experimenting with some different ways of doing the hybrid. We have some advantages in that. In the Capitol, we have CTN's cameras to help with the video component. And a lot of local towns are going to be really struggling trying to figure out the best combination of hardware and software to make it all work. So that might be kind of a fun way to explore some of the challenges.
Especially yes, your definition of fun may need some refinement, but yes.
Yeah. To me, it's fun. This is what I do for a living, so it's fun.
Agreed. Any other thoughts on that? I'm kind of springing this all on you a little bit. Lyle is vice chair. Do you have any? What's your thought on that? I'm sorry. I'm putting you on the spot as well.
Yep. No, I have no problem with the course of action proposed. Makes sense.
Okay. Bruce?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, if you want to experiment with the good and the bad, my understanding is that only one of the big hearing rooms at the LOB is fully set up for hybrid meetings. That's the room that you were in the last time. So if you want to see how good it can be, schedule the meeting to be in there. If you want to see the opposite, perhaps scheduling it in any of the other hearing rooms at the LOB would accomplish that.
Right.
And so getting back to Lon's point, there's a wide variation, and it really comes down to investments in technology and the availability of staff to manage all that technology. I believe that room, the CTN crew is able to turn the cameras around to be facing each person who is speaking, or maybe it happens automatically. I don't know. But you can't presume that every town in the state will have that ability.
Agreed. Agreed. Okay. Well, if everyone is comfortable with that, and I guess we also might raise the question as to whether the full ACIR should meet next month in that format, maybe we can put that off for our January meeting. Let's kind of decide that as we go. That makes sense. All right. Okay, great. So we have a lot of work to do on the report, obviously. And again, your participation would be appreciated as far as what we can do next week in terms of pulling the survey responses together and then moving forward. So item 5 on our agenda is, in fact, that Local Government of the Future initiatives. I think that we've taken item 5B off the table as far as future work of the subcommittee, at least for now, based upon the previous conversation. But I did want to provide an update on the home rule discussion that we've been having since the summertime. We did have our meeting a week ago Tuesday, which was the last subcommittee meeting on this topic. And for that meeting, we had Tim Hollister, who provided us with the perspective of land use and the application and misapplication and misunderstanding of, in some cases, of how home rule is defined in that context. I thought it was, I don't know if other folks wanted to comment on that, but I thought it was a very insightful conversation that we had. I know, John, did you have, what was your reaction to that meeting?
Well, I thought it was very informative, and I really, I would encourage everyone to read his, from 1985 article on home rule. I thought it was very helpful in just to really bolstering the piece that Steve did for us. It complemented it very strongly. And, as you all know, I volunteered to write the report. So I think now I'm in the drafting stage, and I hope to have something finalized that can circulate for everybody, in the next several weeks. And we can put this one, as you said, to rest and get it to the legislature and move on.
Yeah, great. I think it was, I don't want to speak for you, Senator, but I think it was actually, Steve, I think it was your request that we actually had that sort of preliminary briefing of P&D members of what we had found thus far. And I thought that meeting was really informative to us as well, in terms of where folks are coming from, in terms of their, even legislators are coming from, in terms of their understanding of home rule, what it means and what it doesn't mean. We're hoping that this is going to be helpful to you and Representative McCarthy-Vahey and others to kind of help frame the discussion about home rule as we go forward on other legislative initiatives.
I think it's going to make a major difference. You know, ordinarily, you know how it works from being a speaker, but you have your committee process and you go through your thing, and it's usually, it's an in-house process. And by doing things beyond the committee itself, us working with ACIR as an example, it just brings more value to what you're doing. It makes it more significant because you're going beyond that committee room. Ordinarily, you do committee stuff and it just goes to another committee. Here you're part of something that's a bigger and more livelier, and when I say livelier, it's in the process of doing something and creating something, and that's a lot different than the normal process that we sit through.
Yeah, good, thank you. Jim.
I thought that the discussion about this, the historic difference as related to the legal powers, the historic deference that we've experienced in Connecticut over the years, the deference to allowing the local view to prevail unless it was really a statewide issue, so to speak. So, but I think that that discussion of historic deference was very important to the whole process.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you raised that. What Jim is referring to is that I think the outcome of the subcommittee meeting after we heard from Tim Hollister was a recognition that if the state is going to step into the realm of changing or, of course, mandating is one thing, but, you know, really getting into the question of changing a framework for all municipalities statewide to address a particular social ill or to make a statewide change in the approach is something that certainly the state has the authority to do. But if the state's going to do that, if the legislature is going to do that, it has to do so very carefully and without a sense of a one-size-fits-all approach that may affect every town differently, depending upon its size or makeup. And so, if you're gonna get into the realm of making a statutory change that is going to impact every town in the state, do so very carefully. That was, I think, a great point that was made at the last subcommittee meeting. I'm sure will be part of the report that John produces. Yeah, Lyle.
Yeah, I brought up the point of historic deference because I think it's the way I would put it is a little different, which is historic deference is not constitutional right. And I think that's where people get confused, because the state has historically deferred to localities on land use being a classic going right back to the foundation of the town, how they platted out, doesn't mean the state has no power over towns and zoning. You know, there's a great historical deference to that. And I think it varies by area of topic. And to your point, if the state is going to intervene in things that historically were deferred to town activity, they should do so carefully without being clumsy. But I think the point, though, that historic deference is not a constitutional right. I think that's an important point. We have, I think, an important distinction there between what is historical deference and what is a historic right on the part of towns. And I think people get confused about that. And then that goes back to my favorite, of course, the Dillon's rule, which is, towns are creatures of state government in Dillon rule states and do only those things they're told to do. That's it. And I think we need to remember that. So even though there's historic deference, push comes to shove, the Dillon rule still applies. So I just wanted to add that again. But the historic deference point, I think, is where people get confused. They think historic deference is a constitutional right. Well, that's not true.
Agreed. Right. And as I say, I think that'll be an important element of what what John's report will reflect, yeah. I think.
And I think that what Lyle just expressed, which is, I think, right on point, was something we saw confusion when we did the briefing. It's right after Steve Mednick did his presentation, we heard it sort of flip on its ear quite quickly. And if we can clarify that with this paper, which is one of the goals, I think that's a primary goal. And the interesting thing, too, if you go through Tim Hollister's paper, was perhaps an open discussion beyond this paper, but in the future for us to look at is the use of home rule and both tightening and loosening it to sort of stimulate change in whether I focus on regionalism, but there's an argument there that perhaps giving more flexibility to towns would stimulate cooperation, shared services, regional approaches, et cetera. And there's some studies that look at that in the framework of home rule and what constraints or pulling back on the constraints have in stimulating that.
Yep.
Great. Yeah. Yeah, that was another great point, I think, that came out of that meeting as well. So we'll look forward to seeing John's draft and completing that study function that we took on under the LGF subcommittee. So thanks, John, for being willing to do that. So we'll move on to item 6 on our agenda, which is, and we'll start with, which is other old business, but we'll start with the UConn relationship and the UConn UGA studies, but also the Institute for Municipal and Regional Policy and its move to UConn and some of the conversations that have happened around that. Lyle, that's typically your...
I just wanted to indicate that Professor Mohammed El-Qadri has been elected as a fellow of the National Academy of Public Administration as of yesterday, so he was down in Washington. But we are now, and I don't want to put CCM on the spot, we are now waiting for the CCM report on municipal issues to come out, and we will plan on doing some webinars jointly with UConn and CCM on that. The third in a series on youth auto theft is actually coming up later this month. Turns out to be a very hot topic. This is going to be on looking at solutions related to youth auto theft. So this is the third in a series. But the next one relevant to ACIR is to look at one or two webinars that relate to the CCM report in light of a lot of our ACIR work and our cooperative work with UConn. So we're proceeding apace, and we also have a November 18th effort with UConn on the Hartford-Springfield-Boston Rail Economic Impact Study that we'll be doing on the November 18th at noon at UConn. So we have things going on, and again, we'll wait for the CCM report to be issued. And now that the election's out of the way, we hope the report will come out soon. So,
great, thanks, Ron. Did you have a?
The report should be coming out soon, very soon. So,
great. Thanks, Ron.
Yeah. I think it'll be worth the wait.
I've been working with Rick Porth on this and talked to Joe DeLong about it. So I'm looking forward to it. And then once we have that in hand, we can sort of have a conversation about, one or two webinars in addition to all the work you're going to be doing with CCM. But to get to the broader audience at UConn, So it's just not CCM member stuff. This would be the, you know, opinion leaders and others in UConn. So once that report is out, we can have a conversation about those pieces that might make more sense for that broader audience rather than just CCM membership.
No, great. That sounds great. Sounds yep. great.
Yep. All great. Looking forward to doing that.
Well, one question. Is Pioneer Valley involved because of the Hartford Springfield Rail?
Absolutely. Kim Robinson is going to be on the November 18th panel. We've briefed both the federal delegation in Connecticut, but also we have additional meetings coming up with Senator Warren. So we've had meetings with basically virtually with the federal delegation in Massachusetts, both senators and a number of Kim Robinson and Pioneer Valley has been very helpful with that. And so, yes, we're definitely working out in close cooperation on that. Our most recent effort was we commissioned a study of ridership on the Hartford-Springfield-Boston line, and we found that it was a 54% increase from what MassDOT had said would be the real numbers. So they kind of lowballed the ridership numbers and highballed the price tag, in our opinion. And so Pioneer Valley has been a partner in doing this, and we also did a number of things. The EDA grant application for Build Back Better was a joint effort with Pioneer Valley. So we're continuing that partnership that, as you well know, Senator, we've had for a number of years, and continuing that with Kim Robinson, who's now 2 years into her job there, which is time has flown. So, yep, thanks for the question.
Yeah, thank you. I know that's their priority. I knew pretty well we were working together. We always have, but I just wonder, people need to know that it's not just us that, you know, we are working cross-border on this.
Absolutely. We have another EDA grant opportunity, and even though the state of Connecticut is going to be doing a grant opportunity on the second EDA grant, we're looking at potentially some workforce aspects with Pioneer Valley, because not to belabor everything here, but we have very similar economic structures, advanced manufacturing, healthcare, higher ed. We have a lot of similar economic elements in our two regions. So we continue to do that.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
The other element under this old business item on our agenda, we should also just alert the rest of the members to two letters that that Lyle and I are sending to the governor in our capacity as chairs of ACIR that we discussed in the past. One is the support for the use of ARPA money, federal ARPA money, to promote the staffing and the staffing up of that institute at UConn. Under Professor Alcadre's leadership. The other is a recommendation that we're making to the governor for increased staffing at OPM to help support ACIR and other intergovernmental activities within OPM. Both of those letters, the first letter is a more immediate. Well, they're both immediate, but the first letter is really designed to focus attention on the use of the ARPA money as decisions get made over the course of the next several weeks. And then, of course, the second is a recommendation for the governor's budget adjustments for 2022 that are being actually developed as we speak. Now, I'm going to confess to the group that we've actually drafted the letter and we've gotten comments, but it has not actually been delivered yet to the governor. That's in part because I can't rely on Bruce's good offices because it's a little inappropriate for OPM employees to be recommending staffing at OPM to the governor. So we're going to try to be discreet about that. But nevertheless, we are getting that letter off to the governor now, so that hopefully that will be included in his consideration. I know we've discussed this in past meetings, but I just wanted to alert folks to the fact that that is going out on ACIR's behalf.
Yep.
All right. So, and then the last item, our plans for the 2022 legislative session. Clearly, if there are one of the things that we will be advocating for, particularly if the governor is inclined, is the increased staffing at OPM to not only provide more services to municipalities at OPM, a function that OPM has historically offered to municipalities, and other states actually provide in similar contexts. But it also will provide a little bit more bandwidth for ACIR to do the work that we're trying to do, because as I indicated in the letter to the governor, you know, it's, while well-meaning, ACIR is very limited to the work it can actually accomplish, because, you know, look at your screens. These are the folks who actually have to produce the work, along with Bruce. And thank God we've got Bruce helping us with all this. But really, so much of the work has to be done by our own members, and we all have other full-time jobs. So it does limit what ACIR can do. So the notion that OPM should be beefing its staff up to perform these kinds of services is, I think, long overdue. And I know I'm preaching to the choir, Senator Cassano, but I know for other legislators, hopefully that will resonate. So, so as far as the 2022 legislative session, I think that would be a topic for us to pursue, as well as we're going to need to be available to comment on and offer input on whatever changes to the hybrid meeting requirements that may be adopted by the legislature later in the session. So other than those two things, I don't know if you want to have discussions about other things that ACIR might want to take up in the 22 session. Now would be the time to do so, because obviously we want to be prepared for the session when it, after it begins in early February. So either now or at our next meeting, we can have that conversation. I don't know if anybody has any thoughts right now.
Brendan, you're right on. In talking with, you know, members of the Senate that you know, we talk every week, we miss being there. We can't, it's just not the same. And I think when you get back into February, you're going to see more desire to do things and get things done than we've probably ever seen on a regular basis, simply because we haven't been there. It's a terrible feeling to feel you're not doing what you can do. You do as much as you can, but it's not the same. It's just not the same. The personal contact is not the same. And so at the same time, there's a safety factor, and you know, people who don't want to be there still can be part of the process. So I mean, that's the kinds of things we're going to have to wrestle with. But I got a hunch that they're going to be wide open to doing things and doing things that we probably haven't traditionally done, because you want to get something done, because we haven't got a lot done. We haven't been able to. And so, I'd load up the calendar, because I think you're going to get more response than we've ever had.
Great. Well, and if folks have some particular items that we should be endorsing and promoting in the 22 session, you know, as I say, this is the time, and we heard from the senator, you know, this would be the time to start thinking about that and preparing for that. So, you know, if not, today's meeting, if maybe in by the time we get to the December meeting, if folks have particular interests, bring them forward so we can consider them.
Yeah, let's create a futures agenda that's a package, and you know, we've been doing a lot of research, a lot of work, and so on. Let's put it together into a package, into a bill, not just an item, but a package.
Great. Yeah, John.
I would suggest if the chairs of planning and development would allow that for you and Lyle, if ACIR could provide a briefing to planning and development on the work we're doing. We're doing a lot of things, but we, you know, and we've now been reconstituted, and We're doing a lot of things we haven't done in years. But as far as I know, there's not been that kind of, sort of pre-session or beginning of the session briefing by this group to as a point of information to the full body of the membership of the Planning and Development Committee. And I think that would be beneficial for them to hear that from the chairs of this group, just to get them on the same page as where we're at, or at least the opportunity to be.
I agree with you fully, because if we're going to have a package, it would be great that it's presented by ACR to the committee.
Terrific. That's great. Francis?
Yes, this is an excellent idea. I have a question. To what extent will this package draw on the work that was done for ACIR's report of a year or a year and a half ago? Our long report of recommendations.
It's a great point. And yeah, maybe it's a question of going back over that to determine what things we would like to try to push for. So the answer is, yeah, all of it, some of it. I think it's up to the group to decide what we'd like to actually take on and promote in 22. I mean, we've got an open invitation from Senator Cassano,
and that's a real invitation. And we can also point out there are some things we wanted to do, but simply because of the system and what we're into with COVID and all that, we haven't been able to do. But we want to move forward with the following. Let's be aggressive.
Great, Jim. You need to unmute, Jim.
Yeah, thank you. Just a thought. For future consideration, ages ago, Governor Malloy wrote Executive Order Number 10, I believe it was, that required state agencies and municipal departments to be familiar with the basic National Incident Management System and emergency management procedures. And I think from my point of view in emergency management, the state agencies did not, perhaps I'll be kind and say, they did not play well as it relates to following the National Emergency Management System as it related to the pandemic. And that created a tremendous amount of angst and confusion at the municipal level, I believe. And so perhaps there should be a review of that mandate that is involved in Executive Order Number 10, which I think I checked with Bruce quite a few months ago, that executive order is still in effect. And I think it has basically kind of been ignored in the last few years, let's put it that way.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jim. Perhaps we can, if Bruce, you can, maybe if in our agenda next month, we can actually itemize some things that are coming up from the group. That being at the top of the list, if we can prepare ourselves for a discussion on that and an endorsement of that by ACIR for the 22 session. John, did you have
the report that Francis refers to, which I made that presentation to a joint meeting of Finance, Revenue, and Bonding, and Planning and Development, was in response to a study that was part of legislation that had passed in 2019. And I think we did the report on February 20th, if memory serves me, which is about the last time I was at the Capitol before, a month ago. And we got some pushback on that, or I did after the meeting, but we never really were able to reconvene as ACIR. And unfortunately, as Steve has pointed out, the legislature went into remote hibernation. So there's a lot of good recommendations in that. One of which is the staffing at OPM that we're addressing. But it would be worth, I think, revisiting many elements of that, because I think they do address the local government of the future piece. But it's unfortunate that there's a lot of work went into that. And then, you know, just like a lot of things, COVID hit and we gave the presentation and everything shut down. So it's just been sort of, to me, unfinished. It's 34 pages or whatever it is of unfinished business. A lot of stuff in it.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, could we recirculate that report?
Yeah.
In advance of our December meeting? I think it'd be very helpful.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. Well, yeah, you're right. Yes, I think that we should do that. Francis?
Yes, I think you know John and everybody else did a fantastic job in the report. I think it's an excellent opportunity to dust it off and, you know, really act on it for the first time. Maybe we need to condense it a bit, but I think it's an excellent starting point for our work.
Great. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Francis. Yeah.
It still is on the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding's information on their homepage as a point of reference, but I'm sure Bruce has it somewhere.
Great. Be careful what you wish for, Senator, because, you know, we'll be knocking on your door soon.
I'm ready.
Great. Okay, thanks for that. Is there any other new business to bring up today or any other matters for our consideration that folks wanted to bring up? Oh, thanks, Martin. Martin actually posted the task force recommendation. Martin found it first. He wins the prize. That means that Martin gets to make the motion to adjourn when it's time to do that.
I'm ready.
There we go.
So just before we do that, are there any other comments from the public who may be joining us today? Okay. If not, or seeing none, just to point out to folks in terms of upcoming meetings, again, the study group on hybrid or electronic meetings, we will be letting you know when those meetings will be taking effect. The first to be a smaller group to kind of call through the recommendations and responses, and then a reconvening of a larger group to set about the task. Our subcommittee meeting for local governments in the future is November 23rd. We're not taking up any particular items, except maybe we want to reserve that date for a meeting of the study group. So hold that date on your calendar. It's 2 days before Thanksgiving, but you may want to hold that on your calendar just for because we may need that thing. And then our next ACIR meeting of the full ACIR is Friday, December 3rd. So with that, any other thoughts? If not, Martin, you have the honor.
I will make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
Okay. All those in favor of adjourning, please give a saying
aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you all. Thanks for all your help and your input. We've got, again, a lot of work to do over the holidays, but appreciate your participation. And we'll be in touch soon. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a good weekend.
Bye, everybody.
Have a great Thanksgiving, everyone.
You too.
Senator.